This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today in episode 10, season 3, I sit down to chat with Steve Woolley, the host of the Brisbane-based Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat podcast. This was a great moment for my podcasting journey, as it was only a week prior that Steve was generous enough to have me on his own podcast. Steve has a very interesting background in both running and Muay Thai boxing. Subsequently, we go on to talk about his story in these disciplines, along with his involvement in Brisbane running groups, the Eat, Sleep, Running, Repeat podcast itself, mental applications, and his own father, who has been a strong influence on Steve's running to date. I hope you enjoy. Well, Steve Woolley, welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Yes, thanks for having me, mate. It was great interviewing you. It's going to be weird being on the other end.
Yeah, I was thinking it was about a week ago, actually. Exactly a week ago on Sunday night, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, because I was on yours. I did that massive long run session with local runner Taz Savage on the Saturday, and I was so buried from it. I just couldn't get off the couch all day that Saturday. I was wrecked.
Yeah, and delayed it one day, which I didn't mind. A bit more preparation as well. I felt like I need to prepare more as a guest than a host last week.
You were excellent, mate. You just spoke so clearly, and you were like a full professional.
Well, I said to you, I definitely the preparation was more so mental. I didn't take any notes into it, and yeah, just spoke from the head and the heart, and definitely had a few people, older mates and current running mates as well, reach out and just talk about things that resonated in with my running journey. So definitely appreciated that opportunity.
Yeah, awesome.
Now, it's 30th of June for some context, 7:05 p.m. We've done pretty well. I think my son's down now, and I remember last week you mentioned it was a bit of a podcast battle off between us, but ended up being pretty positive experience, at least. So maybe we can continue that tonight.
For sure.
And, you know, you're in the midst of the Gold Coast Marathon training. Well, you know, the very back end of it, because a week away you'll be on the start line on Sunday in that marathon. So, yeah, I just wonder, how's the weekend fared for you a week out? How far do you run in your long run?
Oh, we ran for the first time I've ever done it. We ran the Caboolture Rail Trail, I think it's called. It was just a 10K out and back. It's like a concrete path, but it is the old railway line. So it was a really nice run, sort of through the countryside of Caboolture. And yeah, that was just 10K out. There's a drink bubbler at the end. Got a quick drink, and then we turned around and brought it home. It's sort of kind of all uphill on the way out, very slight uphill, and then all the way back it was everyone trying to like back it off because you just started getting rolling.
Very tempting.
Yeah, just had to really kind of keep telling everyone to back it off a bit. But yeah, that was good. Huge group of us as usual. We usually do a long run with a group. Some of them are from the South Pine Striders. Some of them are like Runco, you know, with Paul and Andy Day.
Yeah.
And so it was the usual group. It was really enjoyable. I love running in those big groups on a Sunday.
Oh, how good's a long run with a big pack? The thing too with you, Steve, is you've dabbled in a number of groups, South Pine Striders over the years, the Bush Turkeys in more recent years, Runco, yeah, with Paul and Andy, like you mentioned. I was looking through your Instagram today as well, and obviously the podcast Singlet, not really a group, but a singlet, is now out there. So you're representing a few different brands. Must be kind of cool seeing a lot of the North Side running scene, at least.
Yeah. I'll have to send you this meme, but one of the Striders, Anthony Folster, he made like a meme of it's like a guy in like control room, like sweating, and he doesn't know which button to press. And he's like got South by Striders, Runco, Bush Turkeys on the thing. It's pretty funny. But yeah,
I found a photo of you half dressed. The top was one of the, I know you were wearing Bush Turkey socks, and I think that the top might have been Runco in one photo. Might have had that wrong, but at least there was a mix.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Ever since I've got me Bush Turkey singlet, I've been injured. But I think I'm on the mend now, so I haven't really had a decent run in the Bush Turkey singlet yet, but next year for sure, or maybe even this year towards the end of the year, get some good results. Potentially. In.
And we spoke about them last week, didn't we? A growing group of the North Side. I've definitely had a few runs with them, not formally for a training session, but just one or two of them in a long run and jogs here and there. And yeah, they continue to get bigger and better. But yeah, let's get to you and that Gold Coast Marathon, as we alluded to, is on the horizon next week, but that'll be part of the conversation. I'd like to talk about the training week if we can, Steve, for you at the moment and how that's looked over the last few months for the marathon and in general. But then, yeah, as we spoke about last week when I was on your podcast, that Muay Thai background, obviously the running as well, and your dad's been a big part of that.
Yeah.
We didn't speak last week too because Sasha as well, sister of yours, was a teacher of mine. I'm not sure if that's come across your desk as well at Marist College.
Yeah, I thought so. A few people that I've worked with and run with, Sasha has taught. So I couldn't remember if she taught you as well. But yeah, a few people have said, "Oh, your sister used to teach me." Few chippies I've worked with over the years, and yeah.
No, she definitely did. She seemed like she was, when you're that age, quite old. But I think if I did the math correctly, she was probably in her mid-20s.
Yeah.
It's funny how it works. She's not definitely not old these days as I get older myself. But yeah, we'll talk about also the podcasts, obviously, how that came about. I want to get into the technical things, you know, even the like what speaker you're using, how your setup works, how you sort of upload all your content online as well. And what I had on the list too, if you'd be happy to share, is the mental stuff as well, mental applications, because surely in boxing, that's a massive part of preparation and fighting, but then, and how that's maybe helped you in the running, you know, week to week training and also races as well.
Yeah, no worries.
Awesome, mate. Well, let's start about Steve Woolley as a person. You asked that of me last week. After about 5 seconds, I was kind of thrown off. I've given you a bit more time now tonight. But just about work, I had to ask you about your career just the other day. I had no idea what you did. And we spoke about often your running mates, you don't know about what they do for a job, but they run in your mind. But yeah, sort of work stuff, family, and any other hobbies and interests outside of the podcasting and running.
Yeah, mate. Well, I'm a chippy. I'm a registered builder. So I work for myself. I've got my own little business that I run. And that keeps me pretty busy from sort of like Monday to Friday. I rarely work weekends. I try to work as little as possible, but it ends up being like heaps at times. I'm married with two young kids, a 5 and a 7 year old. They're both soccer mad, which is pretty cool. They're on holidays at the moment, so there's no soccer, but that's my Saturdays is usually park run and then straight to the kids' soccer. And I really enjoy watching them play. They're both at an age where they don't keep score. Like, so every game, no matter who wins, it's nil all. So it's like really no pressure, and you just get to see them run around, and oh, it's great. I missed that when the season finished last year. I was like, oh, what are we going to do on a Saturday? Miss the kids' soccer. But yeah, so obviously I love my running, and I've kind of done that since I was really young, much like you, sort of fell out of love with it around the time I discovered nightclubs and stuff like that. But and type, so I've sort of, the three things I've really been super passionate about in my life has been running, music, and Thai boxing. They're the sort of three things I've really gotten stuck into. Do you want me to sort of talk about how we moved to Australia? And
yeah, this might tie in, actually. We might sort of bypass directly into the running journey. And because you mentioned last week when you had me on your podcast, rather, that you'd moved across, I think, from the UK. Is that correct?
Yeah,
and how that all worked with the early days with Muay Thai, if that was around, and the running, and Dad's influence, or anyone else in the family, and how that's arisen to you today as a runner in person.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I started running when I was 8 years old because I was always running at home, and my dad had, I don't even know if Dad was running then. But, yeah, we ended up joining an athletics club in the UK called GEC Avionics. It's not around anymore. It is, but it's changed. It's called Medway and Maidstone Athletics Club now. They're, like, huge. But at the time, it was GEC Avionics, and that's where I met a guy called Fraser Barden. And Fraser Barden is Nathan Barden's brother, who I do the podcast with. Yeah. Fraser is on it from time to time, but he hasn't been on it for months. But so I was running competitively on the track, cross country, and that until we left for Australia. I think I was 10 or 11, maybe 11. Yeah. And then when we, like, as soon as we arrived in Australia, we started running in Brisbane pretty much at, it's not around anymore. That was Brothers Athletics, and we trained at Nudgee College. And then I went from Brothers Athletics to Athletics North. And then I think Athletics North was probably the last. Yeah, I think that was the last club that I was in before I sort of started drifting away. The Fortitude Valley was calling. So I was out there, but instead of training, I was out partying. It's a familiar story, I'm sure. You'll hear that from a lot of runners.
Yeah, definitely. And school-wise, where did you go to school then? Was it in Brisbane?
Yeah, I went to, well, when we first moved over, I went to Mullaney Primary School.
Oh, really? Nice place to go.
True story, I was the only kid who wore shoes to school. Everyone else is bare feet. This is in the, 1991. I was literally the only kid that wore shoes. And a couple of days I thought, oh, I'm going to join in. So I took my shoes off, and I just couldn't, the heat, how hot the roads were. Like, I just couldn't do it. Yeah. And then we moved to Aspley, and that's where I went to Aspley High. And a lot of other kids wore shoes then. So it was, didn't feel so out of place.
I'm glad they did in high school. Was that more of a Mullaney thing or 91 thing, do you think? Not wearing shoes.
I think Mullaney was just so it was like hippie, real laid back. Yeah, pretty out there. Coming from, like, we grew up in a town called Snodland, which is about 45 minutes from London. So coming from that to going to Mullaney, it was just from one extreme to the other,
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about Aspley though. That is a state school, and there's many a state school that are thriving. I've worked in a couple as a teacher, and I do know that in a lot of ways. But Well, one thing they can have challenges with is sport, you know, competitive sport. The programs sometimes aren't as supported and rigorous as the private schools. But for you, what was the sporting scene and then more specifically the running scene like at Aspley around back then in this was still the 90s, wasn't it? When did you finish up in primary?
I finished primary school.
Yeah.
Well, I only did when we came back from when we moved from Mullaney to Aspley, I only did a couple of weeks of primary school just so I knew some kids in the high school. I went to Aspley, I think it was Aspley East Primary School. So that would have been, I finished in 96, I think. So what would that have been? 90. How many years are you in high school? 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Now it's 6.
Is it 6? Is it?
It used to be 5.
Yeah. Yeah, so 92 I would have started, I think. 91, 92.
Okay.
Sport. It was a pretty sporty school. I remember when I was in year 8, Brad Thorne was in year 12. You know, the famous
Yeah, of course.
Union player and league player. So they did have quite a strong, like, rugby league and rugby union team. But, yeah, I mean, sport wasn't really that big. Like, the running wasn't that popular. Running wasn't really a popular sport at all.
Mm.
Much like what you said, you know, it was kind of very uncool to be a runner.
Yeah.
But, I got stuck in until probably year 11 and year 12. I was probably trying to be cool. So I was trying not to be seen so much as a runner. But, yeah, I still did it. I just was I wasn't training as seriously and all the rest of it as I probably should.
Yeah, so normally by nature of the systems in the state schools, the running really is the, you know, in-house cross country and maybe some representative stuff. Especially back then, there wasn't so much organized in most state schools like running training. So what did running at all look like for you when you talk about running in high school?
Well, apart from like high school running, I was running like QA athletics, cross country. So like all, like when it was summer, I was running on the track. In winter, I was doing the cross country. Yeah. And I was racing every weekend pretty much. And, when the earlier years I was doing really well until I sort of lost interest a little bit. And then the performances started to slide. But yeah, I think I'd say probably year 8, year 9, year 10, I was doing quite well. I would have been running for Brothers Athletics and then probably Athletics North then, yeah.
Okay. So if we look at the big question, why, Steve, what influenced that to come about, do you think?
The
running in especially athletics, that was a real rarity back then, wasn't it, to do outside athletics, like the what do they call it, the lit athletics was around as a bit of a thing, but what led to that running then?
I was just so passionate about it in the UK, and in the UK it was much more like serious, and they figured out what distances you were sort of suited to really quickly, and then you just focused on them. And so I sort of was running 8 and 1500s, the odd 3K when I was like young. And then when I come to Australia, we went to Little Athletics, and the guy at Little Athletics said, "Oh no, you don't do that. You don't do that here. You do everything. We make you do the javelin, high jump, and all that." We were like, "No, I'm an 800, 8 and 1500 runner." And so I think we did the one day and then didn't go back. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty different.
Any idea of times back then?
God, I was thinking about this during the week. My dad would know. I think I run like probably 5:05 or something when I was maybe 9 or 10, like, so pretty quick. I do have a certificate somewhere from in the UK. They used to have you got badges for certain at certain ages. If you run certain times, you got a 3 A's, a 2 A's, or a 1 A. I can't remember which was the best, whether it was the three or the one. But I remember I did get the best time, I think, once in one of them age groups. So, yeah, I can't really remember the times, but I think I might have run like 9:15 for 3K, I think probably for my best time. And, yeah, God, I wouldn't know. Sorry for the 1500. I'm trying to think, yeah, because I remember I was struggling to go through. I was struggling to break 2:10 in an 800 race, but then I went through 2:09 in the 1500, and I couldn't do it in the actual 800 race. But yeah, whatever that would convert to, I'm not sure. But yeah, I remember I was struggling with that for a while.
Yeah, right. Let's fast forward then to the post school scene. Where were you living at that time, and did running completely disappear with the night scene and your passion for music coming in or increasing at this point in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I've always run. Like, even when I was at my most, like, unfittest and, you know, living like a rock star, I would still try and at least run a couple of times a week, even if it was just, you know, around the block. But, yeah, I think when I left school, it was when I sort of found, like, nightclubbing and DJing and I was still living at home at Bunyaville. And then, then we went to the UK in, I think, 1998. And then that's where I got into, I got heavily into like DJing and kickboxing. And that was kind of, yeah, I just, even though those two worlds don't really mix, I was like, we were just doing it all. That was like me, Fraser, Nathan. They're the two Barden brothers. We've, whatever, like, any of us have kind of got into, we've all sort of been into it. So we were all kickboxing crazy and nightclubbing. And, well, they weren't really into the DJing. I was only into the DJing. But, yeah, we were all into the kickboxing and that. It was, that was a great time in my life, the late 90s. Late 90s, yes. Early 2000s was unreal.
Yeah, completely agree. I was around then, big, tiny bit younger, I think, than you, Steve. But how did that look then, the running through around that kickboxing and heading out on the town? Was it like a sort of a 1, 2, 3 hard runs a week kind of a setup per week?
Nah, like I think for kickboxing, they just used to make us do like a couple of Ks warm up, and then one night of the week we would do hills, like hill sprints, just specifically for the kickboxing training. And but yeah, that's kind of, I wasn't really thinking too much about how quick I was running or anything. I was just trying to get as fit as possible so I could do better in the gym.
Yeah, so where were you kickboxing and how long did this sort of stay about, this hobby of yours? And yeah, just talk to us about the fighting scene, how many fights you did, how many you won and that kind of thing. Yeah. How did that sort of look for you back then, Steve?
Yeah, it's funny. I met my sister, Sasha, or Mrs. Carney, you probably knew her as. her husband was actually quite a well-known Thai boxer in Brisbane at the time. So he sort of taught me a little bit just in the garage at home when I was sort of 16, 17. And so I was kind of like knew a little bit about it. And then, so when we went to England and we started doing the kickboxing, it was a little bit different because it wasn't like full Thai boxing rules. It was just kicking and punching, but I got into that pretty quickly. And, I would have had, I don't really know exactly how many of the like fully padded tournament bouts that we used to do, but definitely a few of them. And then I had like one full contact fight in 1999. That was my like first proper bout. I fought like a full on pikey. I don't know if you know what a pikey is, but
no.
Have you seen the movie Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels? Or,
Snatch? Ages ago, yeah.
You know the movie Snatch? Yeah, I fought like a, oh, yeah, it was just so scary, weighing in, and everyone was saying, oh, your guy's a pikey. I'm like, oh no, like a traveler, you know, like they're notoriously hard as nails. But yeah, I ended up winning that pretty easily. And then in the year 2000, I come back to Australia and then I started my carpentry apprenticeship. So I didn't really do too much of anything then, because I was just working so hard, didn't really have time to do. Oh, maybe I'd just train like one night a week, but I was worked to death in my like first couple of years of my apprenticeship. I had no energy to do anything else. And yeah, and then so I got back into it around 2003. And then that was on the Sunshine Coast, a really famous gym called Sunshine Coast Thai Boxing Centre. The gym that I was at in England was called, it's Medway and Maidstone Kickboxing. And that's now changed to TKO Kickboxing, I think it is. Or it might even be, Medway and Maidstone. But it was one of the best gyms in the country. It was just lucky that we lived near it. Yeah, and they're still going strong as to this day. They've produced multiple world champions. It's like a real high-level kickboxing gym in the UK. And then, yeah, then I trained up the Sunshine Coast with Joe Hilton. Anyone who knows anything about Thai boxing will know who Joe Hilton is. He's like a legend, you know, Thai boxing legend in Queensland. And then I was like mad into the DJing. So I was living like a rock star pretty much every weekend until around probably like 2008. We had a real life-changing moment. One of my like real close friends got killed on a motorbike. And it just sent me into a spin of, you know, like your life can be over in a heartbeat type thing. And I remember I was just a few weeks there where I was just lost, thinking like, oh man, like that could have been me, you know, just an accident. I could be gone. And then I started thinking about all of the things that, you know, you don't want to die wondering about stuff. Like I was thinking, man, I've always wondered how far I could have gone with like kickboxing or Thai boxing, but I've like ruined it all just going out and getting wasted and partying. And then I thought, well, you know, I was about 28 at the time, so I was a little bit older. And I thought, oh, well, why don't I just get back training, try and get fit again, and just like don't think about fighting or anything, just get fit. And then I literally Googled the closest gym to my house, which was at Redcliffe, because I was living at Murrumba Downs. And I started, and within a couple of months I was getting fit and really enjoying it. And then next thing, the guy that ran the gym said, look, I know that you think you're too old for this, but I reckon you should have a fight, because if you have a fight, then all the other young guys coming through will step up and do the same. So that's literally how it started. And then, so on that night, because Nathan was training with me as well, Nathan Barden. So that first show, there's me, Nathan Barden, and another guy from Redcliffe. We all went on and fought Thai boxing rules, and we all won. And it was, and then that started this whole thing. And then over the next, 6+ years, that was my life. I just lived and breathed Thai boxing and health and fitness. You know, like I just started living clean, minimal drinking, you know, watching what I was eating, and just become a proper athlete again. And then ever since then, I feel like I've just been on the right path. But yeah, sorry, to get to the end of that story, I ended up having in total 20 fights. I won 3 Queensland titles, 2 Australian titles. I lost 6 fights, which are all in my mind debatable. No, a couple of them I definitely lost, but I definitely got stitched up a couple of times. Like every single fight I tried to win, and I went, you know, it's the only time in my whole life that I can say with like certainty that I gave it 100%, you know, every time. I trained as hard as I could. I fought as hard as I could. I never left anything in the ring. And Yeah, I'm pretty proud of that because there's nothing else really in my life that I can say that. Like work, I've never really tried. Like, you know, I always try to do whatever I got to do to get by. With the running, I sort of always live with that regret of not going through with it as it kind of got important in the later teen years. And I watched one of my old training partners, Peter Knoll, go to the Olympics, and I always kind of thought, man, I regret not sort of sticking at it. I kind of felt like I gave up. But yeah, with the Thai boxing, it got to the point where I'd won the two Australian titles and I was like, this sport can give you brain damage if you keep going. So mate, like knock it on the head before you get hurt. I was very lucky. I never actually got hurt. I never got put down in the, I did get an 8 count, but it was, yeah, I was signaling to the referee that my glove was coming off. It got pulled off in the clinch and I was waving my hand, like saying my glove's coming off, and he fucking 8 counted me. Oh, excuse my language. He 8 counted me. That just ruined my clean record. But yeah, so that was like, I gave everything I could whilst I sort of had the opportunity. And then I was lucky to finish on a win. And I just decided, yeah, that's enough. And then sort of a couple of years after that, that's where I started running again.
Yeah, so pretty much a clean cut off of the fighting into running, or did you sort of dabble in a bit of training at least on the
yeah,
side?
Yeah, well, I started coaching pretty much straight away. And as like selfish as this sounds, like I don't know, because it's not that it's not about me. Like I really loved helping other people and that, but you find yourself just slowly getting more and more out of shape, more and more unfit because you're not training hard. You're just training other people. And then plus the gym that I was at had so many good, like guys that were retiring from fighting and turning into coaches. I felt like they didn't need me anymore. So I was kind of like, and I was running heaps at training. Like I was doing more and more running. Me and a guy, Brad, we call him Wax, a good mate of mine. We were running, you know, sort of 5K jogs before training. And then we'd do the whole session, hold pads for each other, hold pads for people. And then Brad said, let's do the Jetty to Jetty half marathon. That was in 2019. And I said, yeah, right, I'll run it with you. And I run the first half with Brad, but he was like dying so badly, I ended up running home. So I run the second half pretty hard. And I think I run 1:39 or something like that. And then I was messaging my dad saying, is that a good time? Because I couldn't even really remember like what was good or what was bad, you know, what was fast or what was slow. And he said, yeah, that's all right, like for your first one back sort of thing. And then, yeah, literally I got a Fitbit watch, you know, like it was a touchscreen one. It was a pain in the ass. It malfunctioned when it got sweat on it. And I started training hard for the Sunny Coast half, and then I run the Sunshine Coast half in 1:27. And then pretty much from then on, I was like, oh, I got the bug, you know, and then I started training properly. And yeah, not long after that, I started training at the Striders. And then once I started training at the Striders, I just improved like every couple of months. I was running quicker and quicker. And at that time, we had such a good group there. We had Paul Gourlay, Lewis Purcell, Chris Woolahan. There was so many fast guys that I was chasing in every session. So like I was getting so much out of every Tuesday and Thursday night. It was so good.
When did they start South Pine Striders themselves as a running group?
Yeah, I think it might have been like 2012, 2013, around that time. I'm just guessing, but I think it was around that time that they got that group together.
And yeah, it seems like they've been around for a while, and definitely not a group that's sort of overtly, you know, in your face or marketing a lot. They just sort of have been consistent, good people, just sort of in the background, chipping away and just sort of, yeah, ever present around the running scene.
Yeah, they've got a lot of members that are just there for like, you know, their health and fitness. They're not sort of pushing themselves too hard, but at the moment, there's like actually a few guys that are starting to run fast. So the sessions there might start getting good again soon. But yeah, they've not had that many fast runners there for a while. But that's been great. I've met so many good people at the Striders. So many like funny guys, man. The long runs with some of them guys are so funny. You just spend the whole long run cracking up laughing. And like sometimes I'll look down at my watch and go, and we'll have run 20K. And I'll think, where did that go? Didn't even notice.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Get in a running group. If you're listening, you're not in one, get in one. It definitely can help. And this probably leads nicely into the training week now and how that's looked for at least the marathon this year. But before I even get there, like, do you reckon, like, right now, you know, I think you've had a setback to some degree, haven't you, in the last few months? Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay.
But generally in the last year, is this the fittest you've been in your life running wise, or is it a standout year prior to this year that comes to mind?
Yeah, I reckon last year I had a couple of really good results. I'd run 16:50, I think, at Speed Week, which I was stoked with. And then I did 2:49 in the marathon at Gold Coast. And then I think this is what I reckon I've done wrong is I tried racing so much towards the end of the year. I reckon I just overdid it a little bit. And that's where that groin issue came from. And then the groin issue just got worse and worse and worse. And then when I finally got a scan done, I think I stopped. I had to stop running around February because my groin was just so painful. And then when I finally got a scan, I had a tear in my abductor. So I had to take a big break and I was doing a lot of strength stuff. And this training block for the Gold Coast has been pretty small. I'm just trying to get to the start line without having anything else break. So I'm not expecting any quick times or anything, but yeah, I reckon last year was pretty good. I was really happy to break 17 minutes at Speed Week, because that's something I do at like park runs, and that I'll quite often run close to 17. For some reason, whether it's I chicken out on the day or I just have a bad run, I've run like just over 17 minutes a few times, and it's so frustratingly close. But it's like, you know, I find the 5K to be such a hard distance. I don't know about you. It's just brutal.
Yeah. It is.
It just feels like a sprint. And if you just don't get it just right in those early Ks, oh man, it's can be so hard the second half, eh?
Absolutely. And pace wise for the marathon, I think I heard on your very podcast, actually, having a listen the other week, you're aiming 4:15 pace. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think if I can come in at 2:59, I'll be pretty happy with that. And I'm entered in the Melbourne waiting list. So if I get an entry to Melbourne, I'll start training properly again with Paul. Like once I get through this race, because I usually am coached by Paul Gourlay at Runco, but since I've been injured, it was pointless paying for nothing to sit at home.
Yeah. So in a normal running week, then, like, have you sort of followed in the last 2-3 years that sort of generic Australian way of training, the easy Monday, the hard session Tuesday, maybe some longer or easy stuff there across the middle days of the week, then, a hard park run on Friday into a long run Sunday? Is that sort of how it's worked for you, particularly across those three groups, really?
Yeah. I haven't really got to do that many sessions with the bush turkeys, but as soon as I get like through this and I'm not injured, I'm going to get back out with the bush turkeys because they've got so many guys that are around my pace and a little bit quicker. But my normal week, just so if Paul sends through the program to me on a Sunday afternoon, Monday's usually like a recovery day from the long run, if I've done a real long run. And then Tuesday would be something like, some hard intervals, might be 1K reps or, you know, 6x2 minutes or 5x3 minutes or, something like that. at a hard effort. Wednesday will be easy. Thursday will be something that's kind of like tempo-y. And then Friday will be easy. Saturday, he's always telling me to, you know, do parkrun, but don't race it.
Yeah.
Which is hard, you know, when you get there and you're like, oh, I could win this one. Yeah, and then Sunday is usually the long run. And I've noticed that in the marathon blocks, one Sunday will be easy, and then the next week we'll have, you know, 5, 10, 15 minutes at marathon pace and, yeah, kind of yo-yoing up and down, up and down. And that's kind of like I've done all of the training for this Gold Coast Marathon myself, but I've kind of just mimicked what I think Paul would have told me to do anyway.
Yeah, true. And you just sort of mentioned Paul as a coach, because he was on my podcast, as you know, and some of your listeners might know that too, who listened in, but I don't know him too much as a coach, more so as a mate and a runner. So yeah, what's he like as a coach, and what's he offered through the Runco in terms of the coaching week to week?
Man, he's been really good. You'd say I'm probably pretty easy to coach because I just do what I'm told. I never complain. I don't really pester him at all. Like I just, whatever he says, I just do it. But a couple of things that I will say about Paul is that every time I've needed help, he's given me like a really intelligent reply. Like the first time I did Gold Coast when I was trying to break 3 hours, the first marathon, I'd like bonked in a long run session, like for the first time ever. Like it was a 3 hour run or something. And then there was I think three lots of 10 minutes at marathon pace at the end. And in the third rep, I just fell to bits and I couldn't even run like 4:20. So I just sort of like limped home with my tail between my legs. And I was really panicking about it. And he was kind of like, oh, don't worry, you know, you probably got your fueling wrong. And I was convinced I'd taken the wrong gels or something. But, and then a couple of weeks after that, the next week was an easy long run. And then the week after that was like a really important marathon session. And I got sick, really sick that week. And I hardly ran. And I was like really stressing out that I was going to miss that really important session. Cause I just, for my own like mental health, I wanted to nail the paces, just so in my own mind I knew I was going to be okay. And because I missed that, I was like panicking. And Paul said, it was so simple, but it just calmed me down straight away. He said something like, oh mate, don't worry about what you can't do, think about everything you've done so far. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh yeah, oh. And then I felt good again, like instantly. Oh, I was panicking all week about it. And then I was like, yeah, I'll be all right. What am I worried about? And I thought, man, that's the sign of a really good coach who can just put your mind at ease. Like I noticed that in my Thai boxing, the time when I was Thai boxing, really good coach just knows exactly the right thing to say to you to just put you in a good headspace. And I think Paul's one of them guys that, if you send him, like if you've got a question about something or you're worried about something, he probably won't reply straight away because he just really thinks about what he's going to say back. And then what he says back, it always makes sense. So if you're looking for a coach, I can't recommend Paul enough. Great guy.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I had the right guy on my podcast then, having Paul. Didn't take a gamble on him, but he was on the pod and then I got him on as a co-host. And I lucked out there. In addition to Brooke Williams, it was just so natural talking to both of them, and definitely noticed that the composure and intelligence of Paul. And yeah, that works very well. But let's get back to you. And I reckon we sort of get into this this podcast, hey? Eat, sleep, run, repeat. As you've hosted over the years, I sort of want to learn about how it's come about. Like, would you call yourself a co-host or are you the host? How many have featured as regular hosts, not guests, but more so hosts to start with? And where are you at with episodes and guests?
Yeah, well, it started with me, Nathan, Steve Sparling, Wax, and Fraser.
That was five.
Yeah, there was a whole heap of us, and we were in a Facebook group, and we were constantly voice. You know, you can record the voice messages, and you can record them for like 5 minutes now. But I think at the time you could only do 1 minute, and we were just all messaging each other, and I'd always wanted to start a podcast anyway, and I said, "Oh, we should start a podcast and just like upload this rubbish that we're talking about." And then everyone was keen. So that's kind of how it started. And I didn't even think, I was kind of like you. I sort of thought, oh, we'll just do a few episodes and see how it goes. And then it's just slowly over time, Fraser and Brad dropped off, but it's mainly been me, Nathan, and Steve Sparling. But Steve Sparling has, he's had to have a break because he's just had some like stuff going on in his private life, but he'll be back. So it's usually me, Nathan, and Steve, but lately it's just been me and Nathan. Yeah. And I think we're at 120 something episodes. I don't know. Yeah. Well, you were 123. That's the latest one. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Cause I was talking about that. We started the podcast at a similar time back in 22, beginning of 22. And I think you doubled the amount of podcasts I've put out there. So in terms of numbers, you're doing super well, but quality as well. You've had, when we talk about quality, I think you'd admit too, that we don't just have bias towards these elite athletes, which we both had on our podcast, but that variety and seeing good quality and conversations and people resonating in those more grounded local guests as well. But you've had guys like Pat Tiernan on there and Liam Adams, Jack Rayner. You know, these three are part of some of the biggest runners of all time in Australia. I can't think on the top of my head female wise, because I want to make sure if you had a few women on there that they get a mention. But just talk to us quickly about some of those more prominent guests, but also the ones that in your mind come to thought that aren't so as well known as elite as those guys.
Yeah, so well, another well-known female that we've had on, one of my favorite guests was Krishna Stanton. I think you've had her as well.
Yes, correct. Yeah,
She is just an incredible athlete. We've had Jess Willis, Ella McCartney. Oh, there's a few girls that we've had. Some of the interviews and guests that we've done, some of the best ones have just been your average Joe Blow, who's, you know, was on the couch and not far off of, you know, dying from a heart attack, and then started parkrun, and now they're like a complete different person, you know, super fit, and it's basically saved their life. And I almost prefer hearing them stories, you know, like some of the Olympians that we've interviewed. You just, the paces and the sessions they do are so out of this world. You can't really relate to it. You know, Liam Adams, he was awesome, by the way, but he was telling us about one marathon session he did. It was just crazy. Like 40 something K and then finish with a 15 minute 5K at the end of it, or something along the lines of that. It was just bonkers. You know, you just can't fathom how you can run that fast. But yeah, then we've had other guys on, like we had a guy who's a streak runner, not like he runs in the nude, he's been running for, I think, just over 9 years. He hasn't missed a single day. Adam Leishman.
Oh, this is Adam. Yeah, I thought it was Adam. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, what a story he has too.
Run every single day. And when he first started running, he was like, he was pretty out of shape and not in a good way. I don't know if you've seen the before pictures of him.
No, I have. I have. Oh, I found a YouTube of him from 14 years ago. Completely different looking dude.
Yeah. So like so many cool stories like that. It's, yeah. I mean, and I just love talking to people anyway. So doing a podcast, I really enjoy doing it, but I love hearing all them stories like that, you know. And then we've had people like Peter Knoll, who was like an old training partner of mine. His interview was great too, because he talked about Paclo Hesse and those guys, you know, he used to train. I think Aiden Hobbs was like a, not a junior, but, you know, a bit younger than Pete and coming through. So he was training when Pete was at his, like, you know, his peak. And he was saying, you know, some of the sessions that Pete used to do, they used to run like reps on the track at UQ, and Pete would set up hurdles in like the fifth lane and run the reps with them and keep up with them. And they were all just on the inside lane running like, you know, 400s and 800s and stuff. But yeah, man, I just really enjoy doing it. And yeah, so I find it really inspiring listening to some of these stories.
Yeah, likewise, mate. Definitely agree. And let's get to sort of the logistics and how you operate and get the podcast actually online. I've always been I'm quite particular about audio, and I think it's just part of my personality. I can be quite picky about things. And I think last week we spoke about when I was on yours that the internet kept sort of lagging out, that the audio was probably operating about 95% of the time, and it literally took me a little bit to get over that. Not that it was bad, but as a podcasting host, I can clearly hear that. Like, have you noticed over time with yourself with that? Because I think that your microphone, what I can hear from the way that you talk, it seems to be quite expensive. Good bit of equipment there with the microphone. You've obviously got the voice for it as well. But how does it work with the team? Where are they located? Is it always externally together? And what sort of platforms are you using to provide this to the listeners?
Yeah, we record it on Zoom. So it's usually just like, if it's me and Nathan and Steve, we're just all at home recording it on Zoom. But sometimes, like, now I've got, like, I'm using a Rode pod mic at the moment and a Rode caster as, like, I guess you'd call that like the mixing board. So that goes into the computer. And you can control all that. There's like so many settings, I don't even bother touching them because I don't want to like stuff it up. But I have had a little bit of a play around with it, and I've just gone, whoa, hit back.
You're next DJ, mate. You should be good with this stuff.
Oh, I know. But I'm also like sometimes hopeless with, I'm like really good with technology, and I'm also hopeless with it. But yeah, I've actually now got four of the Rode pod mics. So we can have a full-on group podcast. And we've actually done that a few times. We did them with Carl Batty and Beth. I can't think of the last name. From the Start Running, Stay Running guys. And then I've also done it with Taz Savage and Sam Hyam. And I reckon after Gold Coast, we should get a few people in here and get it. We've got like a little thing that we do. When one of us has got a question, we like put our hand up like that. So, some of the guests have found that quite funny, like as if we were in school, you know, like, yes, teacher, I've got a question. But it works pretty good. If you just go like that, you know that someone's got something to say. So you sort of all just keep quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's the Rode, I think it's the Rode, Rodecaster and the pod mics that makes it sound good. But your microphone's awesome as well.
Yeah, I'm on the Blue Yeti. I actually dropped the Blue Yeti microphone a couple of months ago. It's got a big dent in it. It's hard to see, but it hasn't affected audio, fortunately. The USB one just plugs straight in. And from what I hear, one of the best value microphones. But yeah. This was a couple of $100. I believe you can spend $500+ on them. And it just depends how much you want to invest, right?
Yeah, I think Nathan's got the same mic as that. As yours.
And this one's different too. You got to speak sort of sideways into it instead of directly through it. You might have seen my Instagram post today. I had my son on the mic and he kept wanting to talk through it up the top. And now he can't hear me sort of talk as clearly, Steve, so I'm on the top. But
yeah.
That's the way he thought microphones operate, like his toys. So they all differ as well. But seems like you got a great setup there. And I think it must be different having people inside the room talking to them as well.
Yeah, it's good. The only problem is that you have to talk into the microphone. And if you're sat next to each other, like sometimes people start talking to you like that and you hear how the volume drops off. Like, and you don't want to kind of like ruin people's flow, but you kind of feel like going, you know, like keep pushing the mic in front of their mouth. But yeah. No, man. It's really fun when there's a few people in there. You'll have to come over one time.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, but I've definitely got an interest in how that all works now. And I thought, as a listener too, so there must be some people out there too that have similar thoughts. Like, I've always listened to Inside Running, wondering how Brady Trelfall operates as host there. You know, those guys don't have that. They can't see each other when they talk. We text each other probably every couple of weeks, Brady and I, but their screens are always off. They're just talking into microphones. He said it felt weird. They turned it on once and they turned them off, and it hasn't been back on since.
Oh man, I just assumed they were looking at each other on Zoom. Maybe that's why they don't mind getting stuck into each other a bit, because they're not looking at each other. But Moose doesn't mind just getting stuck into anyone, does he? Pretty funny.
No, and then funny enough, there was some kind of audio issue the other week, and I thought I'd as an audio particular man, I texted Brady saying, "Mate, what was going with that mic for the first 10 minutes of your episode?" And he wrote back saying, "Yeah, do you reckon that was Moose's microphone or mine or Brad's?" And I said, I think it was yours. And then he came back and said he worked it all out. But it's all interesting, the intricacies about podcasting, because as you know, they're becoming very, very popular. And I think it's probably pertinent now to talk about the future quickly, because I want to talk about some mental stuff first, Steve, before we wrap up. But with the podcast, like with them booming all around us, does that worry you at all, concern you? Are you just going to continue doing what you're doing, and do you stress about making it bigger, or is it more about just providing what you are now and enjoying what you're doing?
Nah, because I think most podcasts don't really ever get past about like 10 episodes. So like, even though there's so many out there, there's none that really keep going. And I had a guy on around Christmas time, Danny Kennedy. He's like his podcast is called the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. And he's a really good guest to have on, because he's like a nutrition expert, and he has these really like cool ways of breaking down your like daily calorie intake and all the rest of it. But he said that his podcast, for the first like 2 years that he did it, he couldn't, I think he was only getting like 100 downloads or 90 downloads a month or something. And he was thinking, oh, I'm just going to give up this thing. But he just kept going and kept going. And then it just grew and grew and grew. And I think now he's just gone past like 10 million downloads or something crazy. It's one of the most popular podcasts online. But yeah, if you want to go back and have a listen to his interview, I'm not sure what number it was. It was around Christmas time. But man, he has such a great way of like tracking your calories. He treats it like a financial budget. So like, he'll say, if you've got a big Saturday night planned where you know you're going to go out and eat, you know, wood-fired pizzas with a group of people, and you don't want to look like a sad sack only eating one slice, you can like trim a little bit off your daily budget on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then you can sort of go over a little bit. And he said, if you treat it like money, once you've spent your money, you've got nothing else to spend. So like, you know, if you've got 2,000 calories to spend that day, once you've spent your 2,000, that's it. You're done. You can't have any more. Mm-hmm. And it's a real simple way of doing it. But yeah. So his podcast has gone crazy, but not even like, I'm not even thinking, oh, like I want the podcast to get huge and do all this. I'm just like, I think it's good in life to just have things that you're passionate about and that you enjoy doing, and do it for the right reasons. Like, well, that's like when I was DJing, actually, it was actually a point there where I was making quite a bit of money out of it, but it wasn't, I never really did it. I just did it because I loved it, you know? And I think I worked out at one point, I was like, man, I reckon I've broke even on all my vinyl. Like a couple of years into DJing, because it costs so much money buying these records. And then so from then on, I was like, yeah, in the clear, which was pretty good. But yeah, like I think it's important to just do things because you love it, and if you're passionate about it, just go for it. Don't worry about what other people say. If you're enjoying it, just go for it.
That's fantastic. Yes, yeah, so as you said too, Steve, you started with five, and now there's sort of three, and you probably meet yourself too at the start of the podcast. You're talking to more local runners, less prominent. And as we mentioned, not necessarily being of inferior quality, but you definitely in more recent times have had those, some of those Olympians and higher level athletes. So you're going to continue that mix. So you're going to have any sort of side things there with the podcast, any different co-hosts, or are you just going to sort of just go with the flow and put it together as it comes?
Man, I really would like to do more of the group ones with like local guys that, you know, sort of guys like Taz and Sam, or just guys that are kind of well known in the local scene who just really love their running. Like we all do. We love running, you know, you and I, Nathan, Sparling, all the people that I run with, we're all so passionate about it. Like anyone who's into it, like I'm like, yeah, come over and let's do a podcast. It's so much fun. And even, you know, people are a little bit nervous, but then once you say to them, no, look, it's just going to be like we're having a chat. And then once you can see people get talking, and then once they relax, it's awesome. And everyone's just laughing, joking. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And the thing too is it might be similar for you as well with feedback, like in terms of the amount of listeners and downloads you might get, which from what I hear from you is usually in the 100 somewhere, but the ratio of how many people actually come back to you and say, hey, that was great. You know, I resonated here with this person and what they do. I'm sure you get it, but the ratio of it for me anyway, is not massive. How does that fare with you?
Yeah, I think, like we do get quite a few messages. The problem is that we've all got access to the Instagram account, so they often get missed.
Yeah.
I feel bad because I see a message down that was weeks ago and I reply and say, shit, no one's seen this because like someone else has logged in and it's kind of just gotten skimmed over. But yeah, like, yeah, people message and say, oh, that was great. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm not that worried about people constantly messaging about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want people to feel like they have to send me a message and say, oh, that was great or whatever. But I figure out that when it's a good one, people like for example, a lot of people loved the Krishna Santon one. I actually had quite a few messages from girls saying that it was really good.
Yeah.
Go and get some more girls on. And yeah, it's definitely want to get a few more girls on. I have been trying to get more of the girls on. I actually messaged Katie Dahl after we were talking about it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, but, go ahead with that.
Yeah, that if she'd come on, that'd be great. But yeah.
I'll get into her, try and get her on there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like social media is one of them things where you can spend too much time on there. You can spend too much time looking at the, you know, there's good things about it and there's bad things, hey, yeah, with social media.
Yeah, though. I can like, definitely consume you, hey.
Yeah, and you can get people that are just, not that we've ever had any trolls or anything, but I could imagine if you were like really, if you had a really big platform, you probably get loads of hate. Just, I find that that's kind of just the way people are. I don't know why, but yeah.
Yeah. Often it's envy in the projects people are doing and doing well at them as well. Before we wrap up, Steve, I'd like to touch on the mental side of things. And when I talk about that, that can be quite a big question because there's so many facets with running that can be of assistance if you are mentally prepared and doing that in an effective and efficient way. But also the opposite, the sport can really take its toll on you. So in terms of like just waking up or, you know, getting out for run at nighttime and the weekly stuff versus the actual races, if we started more so at the daily, what sort of drives you to get out there and run? And when you're doing a tough run as well, how you get through that and get the most out of yourself?
Yeah, that's kind of like hard because if I've got like an event that I'm training for and I've got the goal there, like I'll make myself do it. I'll not always enjoy it. But there was, before last year before Gold Coast, I'd really put myself out and done some really hard sessions on my own. And I actually used that during the race when it got tough to think, you know, you missed out on time with your kids on a Tuesday night, you went down to Sandgate and run in the wind on your own and, you know, run some really hard reps. So make this count or you're letting them down. But yeah, as far as like the mental side of things, like I'm probably not I've got some pretty good ways to calm myself down and that, but I definitely reckon that as a junior, I battled with a bit of anxiety. I didn't even know what anxiety was, but I reckon I definitely had anxiety as a junior, and I reckon it ruined some like sort of important performances because I was just so nervous that I probably just wasted so much energy. Should have been way more relaxed. But yeah, like I just think you've just got to get out there and do the work. So if you set a goal that's kind of easy and you think, like just say, for example, I'm trying to break 3 hours for this Gold Coast Marathon, which is nowhere near a PB. So my kind of motivation has not been that as good as it would be if I was, you know, trying to break 2:45, which is the next goal. Whereas if I was trying to break 2:45, I'd be out there running them really hard sessions. Whereas even though I think, I could blow to smithereens trying to break 3 hours because my training's been so shit. But because it's sort of, I'm thinking, oh, it's only 3 hours. I've definitely taken the easy way out a few times in this training block. But also I've been super injured, so I'm being very careful to not sort of hurt myself. But as with like dealing with nerves these days, I was taught by an old Thai boxing coach that when you sort of really, and I use this just in life in general, like say if you have some kind of weird health thing that you've got to, you know, get a scan or, you know, you got to go to the doctor and get checked on something. He always said to me to just be present. You know, if you're not doing the contest or not doing the race right now, you're just sitting on the couch watching TV. So don't waste time being nervous. Be present. You know, anything can happen. You might not make it to the start line, or, you know, with Thai boxing, he used to say, you know, your opponent might slip over and break his leg. The fight might not even happen. So what are you worried about?
Yeah.
Just be present. So I try to do that for like the morning of a race. I'm just like, yeah, I'm chilling. I'm at home. I'm not on the start line or anything, but yeah, apart from that, I don't really know what other advice I can offer. There'd be definitely better people for for the mental side of it than me, because I'm a bit of a nervous wreck at the best of times. But yeah, I do my best to get through it.
What if I got you thinking about that awesome marathon last year? Well, I haven't dived into the splits, but it was 4 minute average pace for 42 kilometers, and a lot of runners look at that, idolizing that, you know. And we all feel humble as runners because there's always quicker people out there, right? Yeah. But you're always, you know, there's someone behind you looking at you thinking, I'd love to be that guy. What got you through that race, for example, when it got tough in that 30 plus K mark of the race?
Yeah. Well, I was running, I think I was under 4 minute Ks the whole way, and I was actually feeling pretty good. And I saw my dad at 35 K and he said, oh, how are you feeling? And I said, good. I said, in a couple of Ks, I'm going to drop some real quick Ks. I had in my mind, I was thinking I can definitely run some 340 Ks here towards the end because I was feeling so strong. And then at about 36 K, I felt like a little twinge in my right calf. And I was like, oh, that's nothing. Don't worry about it. And then a couple of hundred meters up the road, it went twinge again. I'm like, oh, shit, that's done that twice now. And then it twinged again. And then it was becoming more and more frequent. And then by the time I hit like, I think it was 37 or 38 K, I like actually experienced what like hitting the wall was. Like it was just all of a sudden, I just felt like I couldn't run another step. And I kind of had like a bit of a panic attack because I thought, oh shit, I'm going to collapse. And at that time, people were collapsing left and right on the road where I was. And then I remembered something that Jess Willis had said on my sister's podcast. She said, no matter what you do, don't walk. Because I was just about to walk. And just up ahead, I seen Arvi Singh walking. And I was like, oh shit, he's walking too. I'm about to walk because I'd slowed right down. And then it just come to me like, she said, look, don't, whatever you do, don't walk, because you can make up the time again if you feel better, or, you know, you won't lose so much time if you just keep jogging. So I jogged, and after about 2 or 3 minutes, I was able to kind of like get the legs moving again. And then I passed Harvey and I was like, come on, mate, let's go. And he said something like, oh, I'm cramping so bad. And yeah. And then I managed to pick it up again, and I come into sort of like 1K to go, and I was trying to figure out where I was on the course and trying to figure out what time I was going to run. And then I thought, shit, I can still get under 250. And then when I come down that with 250 meters to go, you come under that bridge and it says 250 to go. I was cramping everywhere, like calves, hamstrings, quads, biceps, neck, like the whole body was just shutting down. And I just sprinted as hard as I could to get to that finish line. And I thought to myself straight away, as soon as I crossed the line, I was like so stoked with the time. But then I thought, oh my God, I'm going to need like an ambulance. I'm by far the worst, in the worst condition here. And then I just took a look around, and I was like, oh no, you're not the worst condition here. Like everyone was just, you know, collapsing on the floor. And I thought, oh, maybe that wasn't so bad. But yeah, that definitely taught me to, no matter how good you're feeling, you just never know what's around the corner. So just be conservative and be, you know, you got to run smart, because I was definitely getting excited about finishing strong. And, oh my God, yeah, those cramps, there was just, and I think Paul Gourlay is he's suffered from cramps a lot too.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
And he was saying, there's just nothing you can do when it starts happening like that.
Yeah. When you've got to that point. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, everything was just starting to break down. But yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen this year. Hopefully I can, because I'm trying to pace one of the boys from the Striders, Glenn. I'm trying to pace him to, like, you know, 2:59. So hopefully I don't like blow it for him. But if I start bonking, I should just tell him, you go for it, you finish it.
Well, there's a 4:20 like a pacer group, I think. Like, and I think the next one must be 4:10 or sub as well. What is sub 3 hours at four, in the tank?
4:15.
It is 4:15 on the dot. Yeah.
Yep. 4:15 average. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, there's definitely some takeaways there, mates. But we might start to wrap things up with the listener questions. You might have seen my post, Savo. Actually, I think you shared it a little bit late too. So in your defense, I didn't give you much time to get the listeners to engage in that. And you probably have some of the same crowd as me. The older listeners tend to not be on there and not engage with it, and probably ask the good questions too. The young ones tend to G it up a little bit. There's some funny ones in there, so let's get to some funny ones.
I'm surprised you had any.
Yeah. you know Nate Williams, he gets around the running scene. He's asked, how long before people started calling you Steve Woolley and not Paul Gourlay?
Oh man, this is a pretty funny story. You wouldn't believe how many times, like, for the listeners, I've got like a shaved bald head. I don't really look like Paul or Andy, some reason people have like come up to me and had full on conversations with me thinking that I'm Paul. Like, I had a guy come up to me once at a Striders training session and just start going into a full story about this Netflix show that Paul had recommended him and how good it was. And like, I didn't have the heart to cut him off. So I just went along with it. Like, oh yeah, how good is it? It's so good. Hey, like, and then I, at UQ, I did a 5,000 meters on the track, and a guy came up to me and he said to me, oh, this is last year. He goes, oh, you're looking fit as usual. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, because with the podcast, it, like, you get quite a few people come up to you and say, oh, you know, I listened to the podcast, and this guy come up to me, and I just thought to myself, shit, maybe he's come up to me in the past and talked about the podcast. So I went along with it, and he thought I was Andy. And I said, no, I'm Steve. I'm not Andy. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. But I did have the Runco singlet on. So, yeah, man, people, yeah, it's a bit of a running joke in the private groups that, like, me, Paul, or Andy could, like, go and commit a crime and point the finger at the other one and the other person to get arrested for it.
Yeah, I can see how it works. Definitely don't look alike, but three fit bald blokes, similar height too, I reckon. I can relate to that. A few shout outs because these probably have been answered. Jake Townsend, mate of mine too. You probably know him as well. Yeah,
legend.
Partner to Jess Willis. He's asking about how you're going to go this weekend at Gold Coast. We've spoken about that a fair bit for the 4:15 and three or sub three goal. Same as my mate Sam Proctor, who I work with. He wants to get a toe around the marathon himself, but he's going to be running sort of 4:20 to 4:30 pace. So maybe I'm sort of coaching him too. I might recommend him not to chase you because he'll probably cramp up like you did before.
He might come past me at like 38K. Yeah.
He's a weapon, mate. He's improving too. Maybe you might.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the other one in here? Oh, get it, Rach. You might know. I assume she's a South Point Strider. She's asking,
Rachel. Yeah.
Where does the allegiance lie? Is it South Point Striders? What's your teammate?
Oh, God. Like, yeah, the Bush Turkeys are definitely the, you know, I'm going to definitely improve if I'm running with the Bush Turkeys, but South Point Striders, like, can't we all just get along? No, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. Yeah, to be honest, I'm probably, once I get fit again, I'll be hitting the Bush Turkeys up a bit more because I reckon I'll definitely get a bit more out of myself running with Arvy and Stephen Butcher and Clive and that. I think Clive's had a similar injury to me. He had a stress fracture, but in a similar spot. But I think he'll be getting back to fitness, so probably be the only time I'll be able to run with Clive. Yeah, but yeah.
Get on him for a few months before he comes back.
Before he gets too fit.
230,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
What a run he had last year too, but yeah, that's exciting. So I reckon you've got a few more years of continuing to get better. Your training age probably is, you started later too. So surely there's something in that. And I think it's always interesting to have a host as a guest on a podcast to see how it all works and what makes them tick and that kind of thing. So I appreciate your time. And I should get this up tonight. We finished before I had intended and I've got everything ready. A bit of insight into my podcasting too here for listeners. It's already on Adobe Rush and I just need to pull this audio in there. And the reason that has made it so easy is because you've spoken well about your training and your podcasting and everything here tonight, Steve. So looking forward to getting that out to the listeners.
Oh, good. I hope I wasn't rambling too much.
No, we like the ramblers.
It's different when you're actually answering the questions and not you got to actually think about what you're doing.
Absolutely, mate. No, for a chippy, mate, you can talk yourself pretty well. So not many out there in the trades that can talk as well. So
that's how you extend your smoke-o break. You just keep talking. Then you don't
maybe
have
you're
to
the
get
jack
up.
Of all trades, not me after all.
Yeah. No, oh, man, it's been awesome.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode or the Local Legend in Running podcast in general, please jump on Spotify, give it a rating. I'd much appreciate it. Thank you.